Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I've heard about this and been able to make it up here, so I'm glad to be here today. I'll tell you the approach that I'm going to take today. I want to talk about the key drivers of profitability, but y'all know what a lot of those are already. And so I'm really fortunate that all the slides that I cut out to make this a 30-minute talk, you already saw in Ethan's talk, so he covered a bunch of those marketing things that I'm not going to talk about as much. But what I really want to get to, and the reason there's a picture of a cowboy right here, is I really want to talk about what's going on inside of his brain with these key drivers of profitability and how you put those pieces together to influence profitability the most. That's where we're headed. Let me show you what I want to do. I'm going to talk about some of the drivers of net income. I'm going to use some SPA data for that, and I'll explain that a little bit more in a minute. We'll dig into revenue a little bit. We'll spend a little bit more time on expenses, in particularly focusing on the three largest contributors to the total cost of a cow herd. But what most importantly I want to talk about is putting those pieces together. We talked about, or Ethan mentioned, unit cost of production a while ago, and also want to talk about fixed and variable costs and how we think about those and utilize that knowledge to make the best decisions. So let's start here. Profit drivers. When we can sell calves for $275 per hundredweight, and at the same time, one of the biggest influencers of all the cost that we deal with, which is energy, is it oils at $30 a barrel? When that happens, it's not hard to make money in this industry, is it? Everybody should have been making money in 14 and 15. But it's those other years where we really figure out what defines good versus great management. And so my job as director of the King Ranch Institute for Ranch Management is we want to provide an opportunity for people to develop the skill set and the tools to make excellent decisions for the good years and the bad years so they can manage those complexities, right? And so that's what we're going to talk about. So what about those other years? What about the rest of the decade, the rest of the cattle cycle when things aren't so good? Let me show you some data. And this is some older data from the Standardized Performance Analysis data set. And in fact, this is from Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico. And the reason that is because we have some really detailed information from there. But notice the years here are 2008 through 2012. And the reason it's not more recent is because things become much less normal in more recent years. Okay? So my intention with this particular slide is this is going to show the net income quartile. So this group over here is going to be the most profitable. 25% of these 44 herds, that's about 30,000 cows in here, will be on this side, and the least profitable on that side. And this is dollars per cow exposed of net income. And the most profitable quartile during this time made about $160 per head. The least profitable lost about $300 per head. That's a range in the average between these two quartiles, a range of over $450. Now, I've been involved with the SPA program for a long time, and it didn't matter what data set we really pulled together. We could always find a difference of over $350 between the top and the bottom quartile. And I think where this is important is we want to really think about and know what makes those operations more profitable than the rest. And so let's dig into that. The next slide is going to be set up just the same. Dollars weaned per cow exposed. There'll be a red bar, which is going to be the break-even. It's the break-even per cow. So it's calf revenue. It's cow cost minus the value of culls that are sold. So it's just subtracted. So it would be the cow break-even cost. So you would know from the number that I'm going to show you, you would need to have a calf price above the break-even cost per cow, particularly calf price, to be profitable. So if we start, the first quartile, as you might expect, they have the lowest cost. And it increases all the way up to the $700 per cow for the fourth quartile. So what does revenue look like? Well, interestingly, the first quartile, they also, not only did they have the lowest cost, but they had the highest revenue. They were able to have low cost, acceptable reproductive performance and weaning rate in particular, wean bigger calves, and market those bigger calves for even more money on average than the other quartiles. Those operations were doing it all. Okay? And so part of that has to be with how they think through the process and make the decisions that they make in management to do that. So that gives you a little bit of context, a little bit of framework from where we'll go next. Now, if we take a closer look at the revenue side of that equation, we already know what this is. About 90% of revenue comes from calf sales, which is simply a function of weaning rate, weaning weight, and then how those calves are marketed, which was covered in one of the prior presentations very well. Market cows and bulls, there's a lot of opportunity in marketing and how we do that. And with the seasonals were mentioned earlier. So how we market those and what class of culls that they are when marketed. But it makes up a smaller proportional, obviously only about 10, maybe 15% in some cases. So this we know. Those are the drivers. That's the side. Let's look at the expenses, because I think there's more to it if we look at the expenses, maybe. So this is 2003 through 2016. This is break-even per cow, dollars per cow exposed. Okay? It was pretty stable all the way up to about 2012. You saw that on a previous slide today, too, didn't you? Yeah, it was pretty stable. And then from 13, 14, and 15, everything changed. We'll talk about that in more detail. So I'm going to come back to this slide in a little bit. But let's really just talk about across all these years, what do these expenses look like if we break them down? Because I think it's important information. If we want to find leverage, find where to make change, we've got to know what the biggest pieces of the pie are. So if this is total cost, it is pretty clear from this slide that these big three, labor, purchased feed, and depreciation, are really, really important. Okay? So it's not that this other 45% or so is unimportant, but if you want to make change that's going to affect profitability the most, likely you're going to have opportunities in this area. And if we think about this depreciation one in particular, man, we know how much it costs for labor. We write a check for that. In purchase feed, we write a check for that too. But depreciation can kind of be tricky because we don't write a check for that. But if you think about a heifer that was bought for $2,500, bred replacement heifer for $2,500, let's say in 2015. If you depreciate her over 5 years and she has a salvage value of $750, your straight line depreciation on that is dividing $1,750 by 5 years. Your depreciation on that female is $350 a year for 5 years. That's pretty big. Now, I'm not saying it was terrible to buy heifers during that time. You probably needed heifers. But that depreciation is real and it's big. And the other thing is all the equipment that may also fit into this. It's the tractors and the pickups. I'm not saying you don't need those things. I'm saying, but when you have those things that are depreciating, be sure that you know how much it's really costing you to have them. You may need them, but it's a really important cost. And this labor one, I'm going to talk about it a little bit more, because I think if there is one of these that is probably our biggest issue when we look 15, 20 years down the road, 30 years down the road, it could be this labor issue. Okay? So let's talk about it. So here's the big three. We talked about depreciation, not only of cows, but even this equipment as well. Feed costs, but labor. Let's talk about labor. And these are the ones we want to focus on for leverage. So let me give you a scenario. I just made this up, but it's probably not that far-fetched of a scenario. So if you had a 1,000-cow operation with four employees, and these employees, their salary plus benefits plus housing and utilities plus maybe some beef, equal to total compensation package of $50,000 a year, that would be $200,000 in labor, right? So what if there were only three employees? What would that mean? So we're thinking about leverage. What is a change that when implemented could have a big impact across the whole system? Well, labor cost goes down by $50,000 for that 1,000-cow operation. You have one less vehicle that somebody's driving around and that you would need. So you don't have the depreciation, repairs, and maintenance on that vehicle. You have less fuel. You either are maintaining fewer horses or owning and maintaining fewer horses as a ranch. And there's all these other things that could be also associated with that. So ranch labor is reduced. by about $50 per cow. This is just an example. So this is an operation that has $200 per cow in labor cost. And I would say that the average in the SPA database is much less than $200 per cow. In reality, in our industry, $200 per cow is probably much more in line with where we are in most places. Okay? Now, what does such a change mean for the operation? Well, it means you actually have less labor. You've got less people, right? And that's not necessarily good. But if you can change your system somewhat that you can survive with less labor, you're going to have to probably do a little more outsourcing. You lose some convenience there, and there's some costs that go with that. You have less equipment needs, probably, and that's probably good. But if you can see, if you look at that just as one thing to think about, one of the larger pieces of the pie, can you change your system such that you need less labor and therefore could save that much money per cow if you maintained output? Maybe, maybe not. So is it reasonable? It's worth considering. I think it's good to think through that type of a process, because as we go into the future and have less skilled labor for the type of work that we want these cowboys to be able to do, we have a challenge. Do you have fewer people that are better, that you pay more to keep them on the ranch? Or do you continue to work in the same way that you have? It's a question everybody will have to answer, but I think it's one in front of us. Now, what I mostly wanted to talk about is how do you put all of these pieces together? The revenue side of the equation, the expenses, those big three that we just talked about on the expense side. This is how we think. And so we're really talking about how do we optimize all the pieces of the operation for the good of the whole, which would be, along with other goals of the ranch, in part, maximal profitability. Okay, maximal profitability. Now, I say that within the confines of great range management and sustainability and managing labor well and being a good place to work. Among all of those things and within those confines, how do we optimize calf revenue, cull revenue, and controlling these costs? And how do we know if we have optimized production in particular? Well, we can look at these production, not the revenue side, but the productivity, the output of the system relative to the cost and unit cost of production. It merges those, the productivity, the output, with production cost, excluding revenue, okay? Cost per hundredweight of calf weaned. Now, you can pick up Beef Magazine or any one of these other magazines and almost always find a statement about the value and importance of unit cost of production. Why it's so good to calculate that? It's because it's a great tool to use. And I can tell you, in a group this size, probably 25% or so really has and uses that number. And some probably don't. And your accounting system isn't there yet. I would encourage you to try to get to where you can calculate a unit cost of production, because the power that gives you in making great management decisions is huge. You really can't tell if you're optimizing well without it, because it's not about the most valuable calves and it's not about the lowest cost. It's about the recipe with the resources of the particular ranch and operation that you have that yields the greatest profit by merging those together. Okay, unit cost of production. Now, I told you we'd come back to this slide too and talk more about these years. So what happened during this time? Now, keep in mind, this is data that is specific to a region that's far south of here where we had this data from. But what happened in Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico in this period of time from 2012 to 16? A drought. Y'all saw all those truckloads of cattle moving from Texas and eastern New Mexico and parts of Oklahoma and headed north, didn't you? And you even probably had some guys from Texas calling and saying, we're looking for grass, any grass, we need to run some cattle up there. We've got to do something with them. Well, that was a big driver of this. And also we had these higher prices, which means people were buying females. And I just gave you the example where depreciation on a $2,500 replacement heifer was $350 a year. That's a pretty big difference from down here where those depreciation may have been on those in a few years earlier. So we have some changes in the market, but the biggest issue is not that the cost changed on those ranches. The fixed cost stayed the same. The biggest component of this increase is the denominator changed in the equation. There were fewer cows over which to spread those fixed costs. And so total cost on the ranch may have been the same here as it was here. It's only 1 year different. But there was a whole lot fewer cows. And I use that to lead into a discussion of fixed and variable costs because I think you can see it so well and y'all remember this time when it happened. Okay? So let's talk about that. I would say to you that my belief is ranching is mostly a fixed cost business. Yeah, variable costs are important, but controlling and managing and spreading out those fixed costs well really is critical to maximizing profitability. Generally, 60 to 70% fixed cost in a cow-calf enterprise. Sometimes it's over 70, but I would say the vast majority in this room are probably in this range, meaning that your variable cost on the cow-calf side would be between 30 and 40%. I believe that successful managers understand how important it is to minimize fixed cost per unit. No different than Coca-Cola bottling company would be looking at, hey, if we're going to put out another bottle of Coca-Cola, we can spread fixed cost a little bit more. Okay? And so it's the same concept, but we're just looking at cows as the product, or as the factory, or as the unit. So let me give you an example. Fixed versus variable cost. So I created an example here of 100 cows, and I used 100 and not 1,000 because I didn't want to put so many extra zeros on this slide. So if a 100 cow operation had revenue, total revenue of $105,000, fixed cost at 60% would be $60,000 if the total cost was $100,000, and $40,000 in variable cost. So in that scenario, these 100 cows would yield revenue minus the total cost, $5,000. Sound reasonable? Maybe a little high, but sound kind of reasonable? Okay. So that means that one cow yields, on average, $1,050 in revenue. Fixed cost of $600 per cow, variable cost of $400 per cow, and that net income per cow is $50. Right? Right there. So let me ask you this question. What if there was 101 cows? If 100 cows yielded that operation a net income of $5,000, somebody tell me out loud, how much would the net income be if there was 101 cows? Somebody else. Somebody said 5,050, right? That's kind of a setup deal. Maybe you know the answer to this is not, it's not that. It was a setup, right? So here's why. You got 101 cows. So that means if we add that revenue of the extra cow, we've got $106,050. There are no additional fixed costs because those are constant. Those don't increase with the increasing units, with the increasing cow numbers. The variable cost, she would have those variable costs by that extra cow. So that means that 100 cows yield $5,000 in net income, but 101, $5,650. That sounds like a big difference, doesn't it? That's a 13% increase in net income based on the addition of one cow. Does that seem like it could be real? So this is called contribution margin, revenue minus variable expenses. Revenue minus variable expenses. $1,050 minus the variable cost means the contribution margin is $650. That's $650 by adding that cow, or that $650 for a cow in this scenario, can be used if the ranch is already profitable. It's just simply profit. If it's not, that's what is applied to cover those fixed costs. Okay? So it's a pretty simple example, but the point in this is if we can know our unit cost of production, if we can know our fixed cost for the ranch, and we can know our variable cost for the ranch, then we can make really good decisions about how many cows we should run and how much we can pay extra to keep cows in the herd. Let me take this a step farther. If you own this group of cows, and you have some years that it's really dry. And then you have some years that it's wetter than normal. And how often do you have the average year? Never. You got the other two all the time, right? We're always dealing with the other two. And so, just like in a couple of talks yesterday, we think about how do we adapt the cow herd? What do we do? I mean, and it doesn't have to be cows. We're really still talking about spreading these fixed costs out and generating revenue. What do we do in a dry year? What do we do in a wet year so that overall, over a five-year period, wet years and dry years, we're making the most money possible? So if we use that same example with a contribution margin of $650, then during drought, how much can we spend to keep a cow in the herd? Let me state it this way and maybe provide even better context around it. If you had to reduce your cow herd by one, okay, to maintain the right number of cows to balance forage supply and demand, we know it's never one, but let's say it's one. How much could you afford to spend on that one cow to keep her? How about $649 and you're still making more money? Okay? So, we think about, can you feed through a drought? I got to tell you, when I was a young extension specialist, I made the statement once, you can't feed your way through a drought. And I was naive because I didn't understand this relationship very well. I'm not saying you want to feed through a drought. We don't want to feed through a drought. We don't want to early wean through a drought. We don't necessarily want to go lease extra pasture that's really elevated in price during drought. But you can spend sometimes more than we think because the fixed costs remain. We're talking about a return to the variable cost on those in that decision. Okay? So you can spend a lot. And the other thing about this is, and this was mentioned yesterday as well, when we sell those cows during a drought, we're selling them on a suppressed market usually, right? Regionally suppressed. And then you have this buyback differential. You got to go back and when it greens up and everybody wants them, what do they cost? 50% more? Maybe? Sometimes more than that. So it's actually way bigger than this. We had our students go through an exercise several years ago and we said, here's the drought. How much can you afford to feed a cow to keep her? And at the time, you actually were able to come out at about $1,000 a head in the specific scenario we gave them. That sounds like a lot, doesn't it? But when you look at the opportunity cost or the missed opportunities of how long it takes to replace those females after it does green up and the calves that you don't wean while you're trying to save more replacement heifers and you have a year lag, it can be pretty expensive. If we know this contribution margin and our fixed and variable cost, we can make these decisions well. And that's what I'm hoping that we can think through well. What about wet years? Well, we got the wet years. How much is an additional cow worth, the net income? What if we bring on more cows? Again, it could be stockers, it could be something else. If we just said, hey, it's a wet year, I might go buy some extra cows, what would they be worth? Do your fixed costs increase when you go buy those extra cows? They don't. You have the purchase price, the depreciation of those cows, and the variable costs that you would normally have with your other cows. So it's worth about $650. So we don't want to let any of that grass, we don't want to lose any of that grass when we can make an extra $650 potentially in a scenario like this. You see where I'm going? It's really important to understand these fixed and variable costs, understand contribution margin, and how they fit together if you want to drive profitability. So, just in quick summary, yeah, the drivers, the revenue, and the expenses that you already know about. We got to have good reproductive performance. It's got to be optimal for the environment relative to the cost of getting those females to perform. We got to market animals well. We got to pay attention to labor, feed, and depreciation first among those major contributors to the cost side. The useful metrics of unit cost of production is really important. If you can't calculate that, get some help and find somebody to help you to be able to do that because it will increase your decision-making abilities. Contribution margin. It was something I had calculated years ago. I didn't know what it was called, and so somebody told me what it was called. But that's a valuable tool. It's valuable knowledge, especially when you're looking at stocking decisions and trying to figure out how to spread those fixed costs the best. So I guess I would leave you with this. Profitability of a cow-calf enterprise is a function of management decisions in response to the natural and business environment. And knowing the unit cost of production and understanding the contribution margin are really the most critical pieces. You're an educated group, and you understand those drivers of net income. But how we put put all those pieces together and make decisions, in my opinion, are really what separates the good from the great managers. So with that, thank you.